KLP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. This is Mayhem. My show is Mayhem. I play local music. I play new soul. I play old soul and everything in between. To paraphrase the late Warren Hellman, hardly strictly soul. If it rocks and it moves me, I will play it. If you like that idea, tune in the first and third Tuesday of the month for a dose of Mayhem.
I heard there was...
Friday, everyone. Welcome to Inside Petaluma. I am Cindy Thomas. I co-host the show with Jason Davies.
Hello.
Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
And usually with Janice Peter Thompson, but she is taking the day off today.
Must be the air quality.
Just being a lady of leisure. you're listening to KPCALP, Petaluma, California, 103.3 FM. And perhaps you might be streaming us at kpca.fm. Either way, welcome. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. This week went by very, very quickly.
It went by very
quickly. Just like the week before.
Yeah.
And the week before that. What's happening?
Yeah. Oh, boy. So we were chatting for a few minutes before the show about election results again.
Well, yeah, there's I just saw this article yesterday, actually, in the Press Democrat. There's 81,000 unprocessed ballots that remain in Sonoma County.
Yeah, that's 40%.
Yeah, so last show, we were talking with, I guess, how many shows ago was that? Was that the last one, Brian Sobel?
Yeah, Brian was here last week.
Yes, Brian was. Thank you. Went by so fast, I can't remember. And we talked about tens of thousands votes out in Sonoma County, but we really didn't have much of a number. So now we've got a number. There's 81,000 unprocessed ballots. And what does that mean for Petaluma? Because this is inside Petaluma. And it turns out there's something like over 9,000 ballots that are still yet to be counted. So this may actually impact our local races.
Yeah, it's a nail biter. It's a nail biter for both Galinda and Dennis, who separated by a mere 97 points.
97 votes, yes. So, so suspense.
Yeah. It was interesting also to read some of the other numbers that there were in countywide. 554 conditional ballots, which means those are the people who registered to vote and voted on election day.
Right.
People are motivated.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, I think we certainly had a blue wave. I mean, what I was reading in the paper was that we had 80%, over 80% of eligible voters turn out in this election in Sonoma County. Nationwide, we're above the nation because nationwide, I think it was around 49%, which was also a record. But it does show that Sonoma County, I guess, is leading in terms of turnout relative to a lot of areas of the U.S., which is a good thing.
80%, wow.
Yeah. And so I guess there's, 9,447 unprocessed mail ballots that are remaining to be tallied. So that could have an impact.
That's just for Petaluma.
That's just for Petaluma, yeah. So, yeah, we'll have to see how that turns out. And I suppose they're going to have some information. When does it say when they actually are going to have it all counted?
Well, the rules say that it has to be 30 days.
That's correct. It does say that. So, yeah, hopefully, well, we probably won't know then before Thanksgiving.
Okay. I'm still going to overeat. No matter what.
And I'm going to try to undereat, but that's going to be difficult, as usual. So the election is continuing to unfold. There was a nice article as well about Teresa Barrett and all the new priorities she's going to have as mayor. And there's certainly, we had a little blue wave here in Petaluma. That's a good thing.
And she's got a lot on her plate.
Yes, she does. But she's excited to take it on. And
yeah.
That's a good thing.
Okay, so shall we introduce our guests?
We should do that.
All right. We have with us today Paul Heavenridge, the Executive Director of Literacy Works right here in Petaluma. Also the Literacy Works Center, which I was unaware of, but we're going to talk about that. And Paul is also the Sonoma County Library Commissioner for Petaluma District.
That's correct.
Oh, good. Good morning.
Good morning, Cindy and Jason.
Good morning.
And Petaluma.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Glad to have you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, for our listeners, why don't you give us a story of how Literacy Works came to be?
Well, it's I was working as a psychotherapist, working with learning disabled, and this is back in the early 90s, and saw nationally there was a real issue with how people learn, and with that, I realized that we have a real issue with reading and writing and math in this country, that our levels of reading were pretty much based, and this is back in the 80s and in the 90s when I was looking at the research. It was pretty much leveled off at about 7th grade reading level. So the average adult in America reads at about 7th grade. And that has all sorts of issues along with that. And math levels are even worse. So I started to look around to see what could be done about this, and other than changing our education system completely, which, of course, that is a huge issue nationally. What could I do on a nonprofit level? And along about the same time, there was the National Institute for Literacy was putting out a regional proposal for having four regions do adult literacy. And the funding would go to setting up adult education programs, helping the existing programs in the states do better curriculum and share curriculum. And using this new thing called the internet, be able to do a database of this curriculum. So we put in a proposal. This is the California Library System. Put in a proposal to be one of the four, and we got it, and I became the director of that. And that started in 95. And so that we had all the western states. We had Alaska. We had Hawaii. We had seven time zones, actually. We went out to Palau and Guam, and well, I got to go out there, and that was pretty exciting, to help set up adult education programs and actually help them get the internet, which they didn't have yet. So,
what year was this?
This would have been 95, 96.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so we were the regional professional development centers really helped adults with low literacy achieve a better level of literacy. And that affects so much. I mean, it affects our workforce. It affects how a community member interacts with the community. How, you know, it's all how they can be better citizens in that community. And so that started, we really started in 95. We became a nonprofit in 2001 and became Literacy Works. Still working with the western states and working with our other regional professional development centers around the country. And so to move forward more recently, about 6-7 years ago, I'm in Washington quite frequently, at the Department of Education, the National Institute for Literacy. And it was suggested that I should go talk to our congresswoman at the time, Lynn Woolsey. Mm. And it also helped that her daughter was on my board.
Oh, so great.
So I did. I remember talking to Lynn. And Lynn devoted her career for education, for getting people that didn't have workplace skills. And so she really took to our program. And she's been a partner ever since. So when she retired, she really got more and more involved with Literacy Works. And that's where the Literacy Works Center came. And I'll explain what the Literacy Work Center is. It's working with low literacy, low income adults that wouldn't have a chance to succeed in a community college. And so the average individual that's low income, low literacy, will enter a community college program and drop out the first semester. I think the statistics are within the first year, 60% will drop out.
Wow.
And that, so what does that do? What does that do for our workforce, for one? That means we don't have a trainable workforce. We don't have individuals that can read and write and critically think. And business owners all over the country and also in California here complain that they don't have a tradable workforce. It's hard to hire people. And globally that affects us because we have, in an international study that was done, 22 nations for their math ability, for their reading ability, for their critical thinking skills, for their workforce. 18 countries are more advanced in reading than we are. All 22 countries are more advanced than we are in math and also in critical thinking skills. So they have a trainable workforce. That means if a new product or a new method of doing something comes to the company, they can train their workers a lot faster than ours. So we're losing trade, we're losing business because we don't have an educated workforce. So that's one thing. And, of course, I was really interested in adults being the best they can be, and you have to be literate in order to do that. So that was the reason we started the center.
Mm-hmm.
And I had researched all the persistence research that was out there on adults, meaning what keeps an adult in school. And there's a number of factors. One is money, of course. So we had to solve that problem. So we had a private family foundation give us $200,000 a year for scholarships for our students. The other thing was supporting this population. And we have a great staff that does that. But also we get referrals from our referral partners around the North Bay, like North Bay Children's Center, the Grayton Tribe here at Rancheria. And they also will follow along the progress of that individual. So so that was another research, part of the research, is the persistence to keep the individual there. The other was childcare. The other was transportation. So we solved all those problems. We have 100 students on the center program now. And instead of that 60% dropout rate, we have less than 10% dropout rate now for the last 4 years. So, and we're starting now to see these great stories with our students where they came in taking an ESL program. Now they're been accepted to UC Berkeley and Sonoma State, and so they've gone from not having a chance of getting a certificate or associate degree to getting into a transfer program, getting the grades to do that. So we're real proud of our students. I mean, it's amazing the barriers they have to go through.
Well, it sounds like you should be proud.
That's
quite an accomplishment.
Thank you, and it's good. And it's not us; it's them. You know, it's our students persisting. And most of our students have families. Most of our students, it turns out we have an 80% Latino population now, and they what they're doing is now coming back and encouraging people getting on the program. You know, if I can do it, you can do it, one of those, which is really powerful, that peer.
How are these folks connecting with you? How are they coming to you?
That's part of the persistence. I call it a four-legged stool.
Uh-huh.
So one of the legs is to work with our referral partners. So we will ask a population. There's Roseland Prep that has mostly Latino in Santa Rosa and population. And their parents, a lot of the parents in that area are low-income, low-literacy. And English is their second language a lot of. So we're going to start getting referrals from them, for example. And so what we ask our referral sources is to identify adults that are highly motivated and wanting to, you know, really bring themselves up. It's hard to get a better job. A lot of the reasons they get on the program, a lot of our adults, is they want to help their kids with their homework. They want to get a more advanced degree. A number of our students have come from other countries, and they have advanced degrees, but their English is non-existent. So we were helping them with lawyers and doctors. And so we don't go and advertise the program so much as get referrals from our partners. And then that also helps the student, because they know the referral source that our partners have referred them from, so, and they also keep tabs on them too. So that's really important, is to feel that someone cares. So that's how we get our referral
source. Okay, mm-hmm. And your mm-hmm. your source partners, how did mm-hmm. you?
Oh, we go and meet with them and identify them.
Okay.
In the community, and we're, like I said, we're all North Bay, so we have a lot of students from Marin that come to the Santa Rosa mm-hmm. Junior College. Everybody goes to the Santa Rosa Junior College, and a lot of students really want to go to the Santa Rosa Junior College. It's such a fine institution, mm-hmm. nationally known.
Yeah,
and they have really excellent programs, ESL programs, and they have great counselors, and we really have a great relationship with Santa Rosa JC.
Nice.
So we even get referrals from Santa Rosa JC. They have a HEP program. Which is called High School Equivalency Program. It's a federally funded program for field workers to come and get their GED. And then mm-hmm. once they get their GED, they refer to our program so we can help them get more advanced degrees. So
I'm on your website now, mm-hmm. and it's literacyworkscenter.org, and I just mm-hmm. noticed under the section on, the center that you've got, it talks about mm-hmm. how you got congressional recognition for that. That's pretty neat.
That's true. Jared Huffman is a friend of the program. He sees the importance of education, as Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey did.
Yeah, here's his quote. He says, "Your collective work to ensure that all individuals have the skills, support, and opportunity to thrive in a complex and interconnected world through literacy is making a positive difference in many, many lives. Thank you for your effective programs and generosity of spirit, and congratulations on your grand opening." That's nice.
Yeah, it was. So that's one of our programs. We also have some parent programs. Parents as First Teachers is a workshop for parents with preschoolers, and in helping the parents learn how to teach their kids how to read and listen and communicate and play. And so they're prepared when they go into nursery school or kindergarten. So they have a little step up there. And that's also helping our parents learn how to read better and interact with their kids. So it's very popular. This year, the Sonoma County Library System and also the Marin Free Library wants to take on this workshop and offer it to their parents that are in the library. So that's another one. And we're starting this year is a workplace ESL program. Because one of the barriers, if you're working at a job and you want to improve your English, well, where do you go? In the last number of years, ESL programs have vanished from around the county. We used to have more of the adult eds that offered ESL programs, but they've gone away. There's the Petaluma Adult Ed that still offers ESL programs, and you can get into ESL programs at Santa Rosa JC, but, you know, after putting 8 hours in, do you really want to drive somewhere and sit in a classroom? And that's a barrier for a lot of our potential adults that want to increase their literacy skills. So the answer to that is go to the workplace mm-hmm. and offer a class there. So we have a number of people that are another businesses that are really interested in this, the Grayton Hotel and Casino is interested starting in January, and they are talking about doing like 3 shifts of ESL classes.
Wow!
And also, we're talking to Safeway. It has the same issue. where that would really improve the workers at Safeway if they could communicate better, not only with the customers, right. but, of course, with their managers. and a lot of research done on workplace ESL, increasing English skills. There's a return on investment that's unbelievable. Less time off for health reasons, less accidents on the job, more loyalty. You don't have to retrain new employees all the time because people tend to stay on the job once their English skills improve. It shows that the employer cares. So we're really promoting that, and we also for the wineries we're doing a marketing pitch to them to do workplace ESL also. So any business that has a number of employees who English is their second language would benefit from this program.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of work going on.
Yes.
So do you have a lot of staff? It sounds like
we have a core staff, and then we have a lot of consultants. I have subject matter experts all around the country. So we're still doing some professional development workshops in other states, like New Mexico and Arizona. We'll go in and do professional development workshops for their adult ed teachers and their ESL instructors on certain topics, reading, writing, math. We're doing a whole new writing curriculum. For adults, the writing curriculum nationally is almost non-existent. And even the reading curriculum is based on K-12 research, which isn't really always appropriate.
I had a question on your funding. I'm here on the donate section of your page, and I see there's a lot of sponsorship opportunities. It looks like there's even an opportunity to buy something through Amazon, and then some of the money goes through Literacy Works.
That's correct.
That's interesting. Yeah. Are you funded entirely by private donations, or do you also have... Okay, so no state or federal funding for this?
That's correct. We had our federal grant, which was the Regional Professional Development Centers, ended 2 years ago.
Okay.
So we're not a regional professional development center anymore. But we're still doing national contracts. So I've been involved with nonprofits for a while now, and the issue with nonprofits has always been that they'll get this big grant, they'll hire a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then the grant goes away, they have to fire people.
Yeah.
So I started out this nonprofit saying we're gonna do fee for service, and then if we get a grant or a donation, that's just icing on the cake. So we've been able to succeed and even take over some other nonprofits or parts of their programs over the years.
That's great.
And so, yes, right now we're so fee for service. We're including our lecture series.
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah, we have this will be our second full year starting in 2019. So last year we really kicked in, and we started to collaborate with Copperfield Books. So if there's an author coming in with a book, so we had some people like Steven Pinker that some people might have heard of. We had Robert Reich in conversation with Lynn Woolsey, which was
I missed tremendous. That. I would have loved to see
that. Big.
Yeah, we have it.
Is there a video of that?
I'm sorry.
Is there a video of that?
There is actually that. Public Access did.
Yeah, PCA did.
Have to check that out.
Yes, and we've had Greg Saris, who had a book out, Daniel Ellsberg in conversation with Peter Coyote, and I have to give a shout-out to Peter Coyote.
Yeah, he's one of your board members.
He is an honorary board member, and he's been very supportive, and having Lynn Woolsey, of course, connected, opened a lot of doors.
She's great.
And that's how Peter got involved. But he's been he's been tremendous, and he's with his time and with getting connections. So, you know, he does a lot with Ken Burns, and so that would be great to get him. He's offered to do the ask to get in conversation with Ken.
So when you charge for these, does that then that gets into your funding?
Part of our fundraising. Yes.
Obviously, you have to pay some people to come. I imagine.
Yeah, actually, not. We've been very lucky.
That's great.
And these have been all volunteers.
Wow.
And we haven't had to pay anybody yet. What we're trying to do this year, though, is set aside a little funding, and this is part of our ask and our fundraising mm-hmm. for next year, is so we can pay for things like transportation and hotel,
right.
you know, which is we can't match some of the fees.
Sure.
You know, we asked Michelle Obama, but of course her fees are so great
yeah.
we couldn't afford that. So
yeah.
that didn't happen. But we're trying to do that. So for example, coming next year, Congressman John Lewis said he would be happy. He's got
nice.
A book
wow.
coming out. He's got a book coming out, and yeah, so that's
okay.
Great. But I think what we do, he's going to come anyway as part of his book. But I think that would be perfect if we could offer him an extra night of a hotel. Or
yeah, have you worked with any of the local hotels to see if they might be able to get a special rate for you?
That's a good idea,
yeah.
And I think we probably could do that once
we have a spare room, and I could.
John Lewis,
yeah.
Oh, I'd do that too, but.
Yeah, so we. So,
I don't think he'd like my house.
He's and so you know he's a good friend of Lynn Olsey, so
yeah.
That
uh-huh.
So that's another reason we're probably getting
no surprise.
Getting
oh, it'd be great to get.
So yeah. our last lecture of the series is Congresswoman Barbara Lee in conversation with Congresswoman Lynn Olsey, and
cool.
of course they were friends when she was in Congress
and allies,
and it'd be great to hear. Her take on what's going on in Congress after the election.
Yeah.
And that's going to be Sunday, December 16th at the Carol Ellis Auditorium on the SRJC Petaluma campus from 2:45 to 4 o'clock. And if you go to literacyworks.org,
mm-hmm.
you can see where to go for the tickets. And it's brown paper tickets. The Ellis it's about $250, so we hope to sell that out, and it's tickets are going fast, so
better buy one soon.
Better buy one soon.
Yeah.
And that'll wrap up the series. So, the other thing we're trying to do with the series next year is to try to get more advance notice on some of the speakers. Copperfields has been great, but they get. Writers that have books, so they only know from quarter to quarter who's
mm-hmm.
coming in. So we're trying to get some people in advance. For example, Al Warden, our Apollo 15 astronaut, who I'm very fortunate to know, he's a Michigander, so am I. So
oh, wow.
I'm holding up my hand as a Michigan map. So.
don't drink the water, though.
Yeah, that's for sure. But he's going to be coming out with a book of poetry, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And he's a great guy. And Dolores Huerta, we're trying to get.
Huerta,
thank you. I never get that right.
Yes.
Thank you. Van Jones said he'd do it, so it would be interesting.
Wow.
Scott Kelly, who was on the International Space Station for a whole year, is coming out with a paperback, so we hope to get him. Anyway, and then there's Tommy Orange out of Oakland that Greg Sarah said he would be happy to be in conversation with, you know. So we're trying to really make this again. It's Petaluma centric as far as the lecture series, but
yeah.
it's mm-hmm. for the whole North Bay, and we're really trying to make this a social justice. Lifelong learning speaker series, bringing in interesting people.
I was looking at the email that you sent, and I noticed you're in the signature you had a nice quote from Bertrand Russell that I'd like to read. It's short. The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves and wiser people so full of doubt. And I think it's interesting to me because particularly in this political climate now, where you have, frankly, a president that sort of celebrates ignorance to an extent. Literacy is important. It has a direct impact on people's ability to critically think about what they're being faced with when it comes to making a choice to participate in an election. And, it can have grave consequences, for sure.
It can, and I think this is a good example of those who don't read or study history in this case.
Condemned to repeat it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that shows up daily. Ignorance is not a badge to be proud of.
No, I mean, the whole recent controversy over the term nationalism and President Macron's response to that, I thought was pretty insightful, having just commemorated all of the people that lost their lives in World War I. Yeah, we can, you know, the nationalism is, there's a direct path to war.
And we can definitely see that. That's why I encourage everybody to read some history. I
mean, yeah.
There's some really good, really wonderful books. And that's one thing I'm trying to bring in is more historians, you know, that can talk about these things.
Yeah, this is an interesting subject for me because I never really cared about school when I went to school.
Mm-hmm.
I had no desire to go to college. And I actually went to trade school instead of college. So, but my history lessons came to me in that form because I became a union leader. And I love union history. And that's what I'm connected with Lynn Woolsey is that...
She's great union supporter.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. As is Barbara Lee, too. So
yes.
It would be interesting to...
I've worked with both of them.
Yes. Yeah, I lived in Oakland before I moved over here and worked on Barbara Lee's campaign. And she's very enlightened.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to that lecture. And, of course, if I can put my... library commissioner hat on.
Yes, I've been waiting for that one.
Well, that's, I was really fortunate that David Rabbit, what's 6 years ago now, said, hey, there's a position open, and I want you to consider being the library commissioner. And this is for the county. So it was each city that had a library commissioner, and then the county, the Board of Supervisors could pick a commissioner. So I was the Board of Supervisors pick. And the library, as you probably know, has gone through a lot in the last 6 years where we had no money. We're basically based on Prop 13 funding.
Mm.
And we had to close on Mondays all the branches and reduce staff. And now with the latest proposition, we're getting some tax money too, so we're back almost to full force now, and we're about ready to pick a permanent director. We have the interviews coming up, and it's just a great library system. It really is. It's one of the few that's countywide. It's a Joint Powers Act. It was the first one to be a Joint Powers Act in the state, and so it's a good example for other library systems how to make it work. And then recently, I have been appointed as the Petaluma Library Commissioner, which is great. So now instead of driving to Guerneville Library, which was the library that I was helping oversee, I get to walk to the Petaluma Library here.
Nice.
So I'm very fortunate.
I have to admit, I haven't been to the library in a little while.
Need to
go there. Yeah.
It's amazing. Just a few things. It's amazing what you can get with a library card nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You can get movies.
Yep.
You can download movies, and a lot of them are really current too. Of course, you can get your books. You can get your books on tape downloaded, book on CD, I guess, or book through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all sorts of great activities there, especially for families. One of my favorites is reading to a dog. This is for preschoolers, and they'll bring dogs in, and the dogs will fall asleep, of course, but the kids get to read to the dog, and there's somebody reading a book, one of the kids' library.
Wow.
You know,
so now I know how to get my dogs to sleep at night.
There we go.
Read them a book.
That's great.
Now, I haven't seen bookmobiles for a while. What's going on with the bookmobiles?
Okay. So I have been a loud proponent on the commission for getting a bookmobile. And the reason being is that we have such a big county and there's areas that some people drive an hour to get to their local branch, which is kind of ridiculous, like Guerneville, for example. People live out in these small communities, and it takes them a while to get down there in the mountain passes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just, with our proposition, why money coming in now, we have some money to spend on a bookmobile, and we just, at the last commission meeting, we're just talking about that. And we really need one. And for a couple of different reasons. One is to get to these remote communities, but also help some of the communities like Roseland, who we have a temporary library for, but that's going to be torn down because they're going to build housing there. So we have to find a place that's temporary, so so the Roseland has their library, which they love, but also the bookmobile can supplement that, and go to some areas. So a bookmobile is great for a lot of different reasons. It can go to I was just part of the North Bay Science Fair, I'm on the advisory board for the Novato Space Station, so we had a booth set up. But Marin had their bookmobile sitting there, it was great advertising for them.
Yeah.
And so we need to have ours here in Sonoma. And it can go to all the branches. It can go to schools. It would be great to have a nurse from Kaiser on there for flu shots or things like that. And I've seen that in other communities that I've worked on their bookmobiles. And it really can do a lot of different things. You can have computers on it. You can have story time, of course. So, yes, that was an interesting question. I would think within the year we're going to have a bookmobile for the Sonoma County Library System.
That'd be nice.
Are you ever looking for donations of books?
That's really great.
Quite a few.
Yeah, actually, right here in Petaluma, at the Petaluma Library, there's every library branch has a Friends of that branch. So we have our Friends of the Petaluma Library, and they have book sales that go to help for certain costs, like desks or computers at the Petaluma Library, and they have a really good bookstore inside the library. So they will take donations.
It's a full-time bookstore.
You can buy. I went and actually got. I should never go in there because I have more books than I can ever read in my life. But I got all the Harry Potter first editions.
Wow!
And they're in perfect shape too. So, and they were like $5 a piece. It's a really good deal. So they and there's a I forget the dates exactly, but if you go on the on the library website, it'll tell you the dates. There's some book sales coming up real soon here.
Oh, good. Now I know where I can go buy books. I just landscaped my front yard, took out the lawn, and made it more politically correct to include a little free library.
Oh, nice.
And I love those.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Yeah. So I've been looking for books to keep it stocked and...
Excellent.
It's actually got the neighbors talking to each other.
Well, let me know if you need some.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know somebody that has
got
some.
When people, when relatives die and they collect a lot of books and you end up with them, and at a certain point it's too many.
It's true. And I have periodically have given a lot of books to the library. So.
Yeah, I have some of those books from my my ex mother-in-law. Some of them are from the 1800s.
Yes.
I've been putting those in the little free library just for fun, you know.
Wow, they could be,
they could be valuable.
Well, maybe they're worth some money, but I want them to be worth something to somebody who wants to read it.
Exactly.
That's true.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, because you touched on a little history there, we also have a really good history section to the library. And it's managed by one of our local Petalumans, Catherine Reinhardt. And this is up in Santa Rosa, the Central Library. But if you ever want to learn about your ancestors, or you want to research something that's historical, that's the place to go. It's an amazing archive. And along those lines, too, at our own Petaluma a library and historical museum here in town, we have a really great exhibit going on about the Carnegie mm-hmm. library system in California. And those of you may know the name Lucy Cordham. She actually did her master's thesis on the Carnegie library system in California.
Wow.
And she helped save a number of them, got them on the historical record. So our library here, this exhibit's about those libraries, but also particularly about our Petaluma library, and how the town people, especially the women, got together and petitioned Andrew Carnegie to actually give them the money to start this. And he didn't give all the money. He had to raise some of the money, and the land had to be donated. So mm-hmm. it's a great story. And everybody thinks that's our first public library, but our first public library was in the old City Hall on the third floor back in the 1800s. So this is our second one.
The old City Hall, where was that?
That was, I think it was near where the library is now, the historical library,
okay.
the museum. I think it was in that same block. But it was, I've seen pictures of it. It's a big old three-story Gothic monstrosity. It was amazing. And then, of course, we had to build our more modern library, which is a great library that's going to go through a refresh. We have great plans of refreshing. It's going to be quite the beautiful place when it gets done here, and really accessible for the public. So that's coming up also. So a lot of good things in Petaluma.
So before you got involved in literacy works, what were you doing?
I was a psychotherapist by trade.
Okay.
And I worked with my personality stopped at 13, so I worked. I really identified with young juvenile delinquents.
Okay.
So I worked a lot with juvenile delinquents and also with learning disability people with learning disabilities. So that was where I kind of started out. I was my history coming from Michigan was I was a counselor in a community college, Lansing Community College. I ended up going to Kuwait for 4 years as the counselor for an international K-12 school that had 47 nationalities, 1,000 kids, who all wanted me to come home in the summer wherever they were. And I traveled. I did. I went and visited them, and it was great experience traveling the world. And then I was going to come back to Michigan, but I ended up coming up to California instead. So that was about 1984. And have been here originally. I never worked where I lived. It was really strange. So I moved into San Rafael. I was working in Berkeley.
Okay.
And then I moved to Oakland, and then I got a job in Woodland. So it was like back and forth. But anyway, but finally I'm working in the same place I'm living. So yay.
Yeah.
It's much better.
Do you miss Michigan at all?
I do in the summers. I mean, there's no fresh lakes around here, really. And growing up in Michigan, your birthright was to have a cabin on a lake. And so that's what you did. And also in the winter, you did, like where I lived, there was four or five lakes around me. And so we'd go out in the winter and play hockey, you know. And as we got older, we'd take our cars on there and do wheelies.
Mm.
And we'd build ice sailing boats. And so it was year-round. It was just wonderful. I don't miss the winters. But
you ever go to Spring Lake?
Spring Lake, there's probably about 10 Spring Lakes in Michigan.
Okay.
So I know it's...
I meant in Santa Rosa.
Oh, in Santa Rosa. Okay. I have not.
You should check.
Is that a man-made lake or is it natural?
I think it's
man-made.
Yeah.
It is man-made, but it's a cool little lake though, and it's
in your proximity.
You're not supposed to swim in it, but you can. But you can boat. And the other lake, Lake Raphine, the smaller one near Howarth Park, you can actually rent small sailboats. So if you need a little fix, you can go there.
That's fun. I like that. And what I like about California, too, is if you want to get in the snow, you can drive a few hours east.
That's correct.
And then come back and see.
Yeah, but who wants to do that, though?
Not yeah, me. Well, oh, I mean, I cross-country ski, so it's just...
You're not into skiing?
Yeah. I used to when I was younger, but now it's... I don't like to be cold anymore.
Well, that...
I agree with you, not liking to be cold, but... I still like skiing.
It's great to lie here. The weather's wonderful. And
yeah.
But it's fun to have that choice,
yeah.
You know, to go up. Right. And then, of course, living on a river, a slough, really,
mm-hmm.
here, we do have, I'm on the board of the Friends of the Petaluma River.
That's right. You mentioned that before.
And it's great because we have, on Sundays, we do have boats that you can take out for free. Mm-hmm. So there's kayaks and canoes and... And so if you want to get a taste of the river, the river is just really wonderful. I mean,
where do you access the boat?
It's
on the peninsula, right?
It's on the peninsula with the big red barn there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
you just go on the weekend and
Sunday mornings. So if you haven't been out on the river, it's really amazing how many people live here and never been on the river. And actually going up.
Yeah, that can be fun.
I used to water ski in that slough when
did
I was
really?
A teenager. Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities to go back. You have to be careful, of course, and the tides. But,
mm-hmm.
but you can go back in some of the channels, and there's mm-hmm. old hunting cabins and all sorts of great
that's
stuff.
That's one thing I haven't done yet. Yeah. If you're on a kayak, that's easy to explore, I imagine.
It is, and you really have to know where the tides are because you get stuck back there. Which would be
good.
Yeah,
that'd be good. So we just live. I just have to say, my wife and I moved here in 2006, and we, you know, Petaluma is just an amazing town. It offers so much. You know, we're so centrally located, and it's just great people. I do have to say this, being a Midwesterner and coming from Michigan, you know, if you're in Michigan, anywhere in Michigan, and you're standing in line at a grocery store or whatever, everybody talks to you. You talk to you're really friendly, you know, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's just salt of the earth people. And I didn't find that in other parts of California when I moved here until I came to Petaluma. And Petaluma seems to be like we transported, you know, from Michigan all these great Midwesterners. I know they're not, but they have the same kind of attitude, you know. People will talk to each other. I mean, the volunteers, everybody volunteers for something. It's just a great community. So I just have to say that as somewhat an outsider.
Sure.
So.
And what year was it that you came to Petaluma?
It was, actually, I said 2006. That's when we got married. So it was about 2008.
Yeah. Oh.
Uh-huh.
So not that.
We were looking. My wife's name is Paula. And so it was Paul and Paula, and we were looking for towns. She was in Encino at the time, and I'm not a Southern California person. So I said, move up here. I'll sell my house in Oakland. And we'll look for a place for us. And then so we only looked at places that began with a P. Yeah. So Piedmont, Palo Alto.
Why was that? How did you come to pee?
It's a joke.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But if my wife was here, she'd be hitting me with her elbow right now. But it's a good story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul and Paula from Petaluma. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Rolls off the tongue.
So what would you see as the biggest challenge right now for literacy work? Is it mainly funding? Is it human resources?
Well, as a nonprofit, it's always funding.
Right.
And we're doing our push now for donations. And again, I'm trying to get, you know, the contracts, of course,
mm-hmm.
but we're also trying to get the literacy works lectures going and getting sponsors for that.
Right.
So, and sponsorships are, you know, if you go to our website, literacyworks.org, to donations, you can see what the sponsorships are. And we're happy to talk with anybody or work with any company for that. But what that does is afford us to really offer people that are off the publisher grid, for they don't necessarily have to have books.
Mm-hmm.
So we can at least offer them as a nonprofit to pay their expenses to come and talk. And that way we can get a bigger list quicker. And, you know, we'll never be like the Marin Speaker Series or anything like that, but I think we've brought in some pretty good.
Yeah,
this is impressive.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say yourself short.
Yeah, and I have to read this quote from Petaluma Argus Courier that came out as they were talking about the lecture series. It says Petaluma's Literacy Works lecture series is upping its star power this year. This is for 2018, with the 2018 version of the nonprofit's popular speakers showcase, now featuring some of the brightest and best thinkers, writers, politicians, and philosophers in America. So that's a nice quote that I put on things.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
but
you deserve to use it.
But it's something, and all this effort is really going toward our students, our adult students that mm-hmm. are really overcoming some amazing barriers and succeeding, and that is so gratifying. To see that. And we've actually, I mentioned our private family foundation is giving us scholarship money, is actually upped it this year because of our success. So we'll have 110 students now instead of just 100 or 95.
Well, after. My guess is that John Lewis is going to be quite a draw.
I would think so. He is quite the icon. Yeah. Yeah. I hope we get him. I hope it works out.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. So if people want to donate, they should go to, or learn more about your organization, mm-hmm. they should go to literacyworks.org.
Yeah, that's correct.
And if you have trouble spelling literacy, that's literacyworks.org, just for the illiterate.
Mm-hmm. It gets spelled all different ways. Yes, it does.
Great. Well, this has been very interesting. I really didn't have a lot of information about this organization before, and now that I do, I'm going to try to help spread the word.
Yeah. That would be great. Really, and that's one thing we ask. I mean, donations are always welcome, of course, mm-hmm. but also getting more people involved. You know, we have a board. We have a Friends of the Center mm-hmm. That Lynn Woolsey heads up, and we also are asking just for participation for other companies, other businesses that may be interested just in spreading the word. I mean, we're looking for tutors, we're mm-hmm. looking for, you know, just suggestions for other people that may be interested in helping our workforce, if nothing else, you know, become helping businesses get a trainable workforce. I mean, that in itself, but also all the side benefits. You know, all the studies showed very poor counties, if they put their effort in increasing the literacy level of their population, that brought in more businesses, more money, the tax base went up, mm-hmm. More civic participation, just all sorts of great return on investments because of it. So.
Now, do you have a volunteer base?
We do have some that help our students that will help, you know, on different subjects. Yeah. But I'll put a plug in for the library literacy programs. There's an adult literacy program in the libraries, and they're always looking for volunteers. It's really I haven't met anybody that's volunteered to help someone increase their literacy skills that hasn't just found that one of the most gratifying things they've mm-hmm. ever done. And it's usually one-on-one with somebody. And the adult literacy program matches up the volunteer with the adult learner. And just a quick historical note, when we were starting to work in the 90s with low literacy adults, and they actually themselves came up with the term adult learner, because its student wasn't quite what they thought they were. So adults that are increasing their literacy skills like to be called adult learners, so, mm-hmm. or learners. So that's what we call them. So if you want to volunteer to, you can go to work with an adult learner on their literacy skills, you can go to the Sonoma County Library website.
There's an interesting piece of information here on your site. Estimated 30 million people over the age of 16 read no better than the average elementary school child.
That's correct.
Wow.
It's not good. I mean, if we really want to keep our democracy going, if we really want to keep our country working and getting the best it can be.
Yeah.
I don't want to quote anybody there, but
you need informed citizens.
If you need informed citizens, the best thing you can do is get a better education system.
And, absolutely.
And the reason, I had a mission statement that basically said we want to eradicate low literacy in the United States, but that starts at the elementary level. There's a whole. The research has shown if you're not reading at grade level by third grade, you're going to have trouble throughout school. So there's a lot of programs that show that really, if you put money into that to make sure you have the best teachers in elementary, and the kids are reading at third grade, by the time they're in third grade, you're going to have less problems the rest of their school life.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's hard. It's hard to raise funds for adults. It's not that's the thing. So, what I did the other day was on our donation form, I put a bunch of puppies, So that's not good. So, I wish I didn't do that, but I have to put puppies now on our donation form. I'm kidding, but people give to puppies and kids, but not adults. So.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time, and I want to thank you for being here, Paul. For our listeners, I think what we'll do is we'll put a link to your website on our page.
Excellent. We will.
And, of course, we have our own website, www.insidepetaluma.com, and all of our broadcasts are available there for re-listening and for those who weren't able to join us in live, so tell your friends.
Great. Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Paul, and thanks for all the great work that you're doing.
It's really good.
Thank you.
And we will be back next Friday, 11 to noon, as we always are. Oh, no, we won't. Yes, we
Unless
will.
We...
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. I was trying to think which show I'm doing. I'm not able to do my show, my Thursday show next Thursday, because it's Thanksgiving, but we will be here. At least I will be here next Friday.
I won't be here on Friday, so unless we pre-tape it, I won't be able to do it.
All right.
So we'll discuss that offline.
All right. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.